Hello and welcome to the Cardiff Podcast. My name is Alistair Love. For episode 16, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Louis Heaps, bassist from Cardiff band and very much emerging act, The Himalayas. We've enjoyed a fantastic couple of years and are really getting noticed across the UK and beyond. If that wasn't enough, Louis now also owns Deli Rouge in Roath, one of my very favourite coffee havens in the city. I joined Louis in the cafe and we explored extensively his experience in the band and contrasted that with owning a Cardiff cafe, as well as how he ended up in Cardiff in the first place. It's a great old tale. You lucky listeners can even suggest a new name for the cafe as Louis talks about his plans for the place. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review, but for now, kick back and enjoy Louis Heaps, who sounds very much like this. So, Louis, thank you very much for coming on the Cardiff Podcast, mate.
That's all good.
That's magnificent.
Absolutely.
First of all, a general question, then. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. We're just sort of moving through and progressing and sort of building as we go, really.
It must be a really exciting time in your life, is it?
Yeah, it's stressful. It's a wonder what you can do when you end up saying yes to things.
Yes, that's always a dangerous answer to a question, I find. But obviously things are going incredibly well for the band. There's an awful lot of noise and a great reaction around the Himalayas. We'll come to that, but why did you decide to sort of take on the deli as well?
I've always wanted to have a coffee shop. I've been working in retail for 7 years now, and in hospitality anyway, and I got really nerdy on the coffee side of things and did latte art and barista competitions and whatever, and I sort of got past the sort of snobbery on that side of things and was like, actually, I just enjoy hosting. I enjoy providing for people. And the deli is like, it's been one of those places. So I worked here for 2 years before actually taking it over. And it's always been one of those places that I've been free to chat. I've worked in so many places where it's, you do your job, you go home, and that's the end of it. You don't learn the names of your customers, maybe like one or two.
Yeah, sure.
It's the only place I've been here where I pretty much know everyone that walks in the door. And if I don't know them, I'll know them by the time they leave, sort of thing. And it's because I've got the sort of freedom to actually chat and to have a nice conversation, and people are open to it. People seem to be very very interested in having not just a coffee, but a coffee and a chat.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like, well, that's always been one of the strengths of this place, though.
Oh yeah,
it's always been a very, very friendly place.
Absolutely. And so for me, it was a case of like, I've always wanted to have a place to not necessarily work under anyone. I've not necessarily always had a problem with authority, but more, I've worked for a lot of people. I've worked for good people. I've worked for bad people. And I've just realised I don't actually like working for people.
It's not very good. I'm still stuck with that, unfortunately. So how do you manage to balance the two, though? I mean, it's quite a contrasting...
Yeah.
Let's not call them jobs in... It's just a contrast in things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard. I didn't do it correctly over the summer and made a lot of mistakes because I just started taking over this place. James, my business partner, he was 2 weeks in, and we played Reading Festival 2 weeks after we took the place over.
Yeah.
And the morning that we were playing, James phoned me up being like, it's a Saturday, I'm on my own in the kitchen, I've got no ingredients, I don't know anything, left me here. Bless him, he absolutely smashed it and got through everything. And that was great. But I ended up finding that the balance happens when, like, I can always get someone to cover as long as things are organized for that cover, it's all good. But if I'm not organized and I leave things, then I end up stressing while I'm away something that I can't actually do anything about because I'm in Liverpool or Manchester or somewhere else.
Well, you mentioned Reading Festival. I mean, hear it now on the day of the gig, did that enhance your performance? Or did it absolutely ruin
it? It kind of, like, I was sort of bricking it.
Yeah.
I don't get stage fright, to be honest. I did theatre for like 7 years before doing music. So I came to Cardiff to study theatre and drama. And so, like, for me, I've always thought, like, in terms of stage and having stage fright, I've done enough stupid things in my life. Like, one or two doesn't matter if I mess up on stage.
Yeah, sure.
But with Reading Festival, it was like, it's the festival that, like, everyone in the band had all been to, like, when they were, like, when we were all teenagers, and we go, oh, one day we'll play it, you know? And so we sort of hit the morning, and we were all very like, yeah, we're a little worried. It's a couple of butterflies there, you know.
How many were in the crowd when you
It
came?
Was pretty mental, actually. I said because this was the second year that we played it, and we played the BBC introducing stage this year, which was, you know, incredible. And we were a little worried at the start because there weren't, like, the, I think someone massive was on the main stage.
Yeah, sure.
And then, like, so when we started, we were like, there's like maybe 20, 30 people in it. By the end, there was probably roughly around 2,000, which was, like, incredible. Yes, it was really,
what was the reaction?
Really good. Like, we were stunned, like, because we're a small band from Cardiff, and then suddenly you're playing Reading Festival, and you've actually got a crowd at Reading. It was very humbling.
Yeah.
But the minute you get on stage, it's fine. Yeah. But like beforehand, you're just like, is it gonna go well? What's gonna happen? Yeah. You know, who's going?
So
who's?
How'd you do that? So obviously, walk on, you think bloody hell.
Yeah.
But obviously, once the music kicks in, you just resort to your rehearsal and
your muscle memory kicks in. That's why I wear sunglasses on stage, so I don't actually have to look at anyone. it all kicks in, and I find it I'm a bass player, so I find drums very reassuring, because when the drums start, I at least know someone knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, like, when the drums start,
drummer's got this,
if the drummer starts off well, I will start off well.
Yeah.
If he doesn't start off well, I'll start off well anyway because I'm amazing. No, I'm joking. He's James is the drummer, and he's incredible drummer, like, all self-taught and stuff, and he's wicked. But he there's this, like, big intro that we do to our first song as we came on for the set this year, and like, just before going on stage, like, quite a few times, he'd be like, yeah, no, let's do this, guys, let's do this, and by the way, Louis, don't mess it up, let's go on stage. And, like, you're like, what? Oh, cheers for that. You know, just
it's just what you want to hear when you're walking
and he,
on stage.
He knows he's doing it, so he does it on purpose. He knows what he's doing, and he's very tight on the drums. And so the minute the drums kick in, and I'm like, okay, I know where I'm at. You know, I'm in the groove or whatever it's called.
Let's call it the zone.
I'm in the groove.
The music. Yeah. Surely.
And that's, you know, that kicks in, and your brain just goes, all right, this is gonna be fine.
Yeah. So the nerves just disappear. Yeah. And you're away. Yeah.
But I mean, like I said, like, it's only a couple of times that it's happened, and for the big gig, like bigger gigs, that you start getting, but it's for weird gigs as well. Like, gigs that you don't know what to expect. Because usually you do X amount of rehearsal, you do X amount of preparation for it, and, you know, you're all very, like, we know what we're doing, you know. But then you'll have one or two gigs here and there that something will sort of make you not necessarily expect what's coming. And so you get a couple of butterflies, and you're like, it's going to be fine. I know something's, like, you know, I know it's going to be all good. We're going to play the set, and it's going to go well, but don't know why I've got butterflies. Yeah. And you go, and then, you know, you'll find out that, I don't know, like, it's because some sound guy or something that has like pumped up the volume on your monitors, and suddenly you sound amazing to yourself, and you're like, this is great. And and that's where, like, you sort of, like, it's just a bit, every time you get a bit more from a gig, you sort of get a return on the butterflies, yeah. I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
That makes sense
to me.
that totally makes sense. Mm. And I guess it must differ from show to show. You must. Yeah. There must be slightly different elements that can throw you off.
Yeah. It's very odd. Like, this year we've had a pretty solid set in terms of how, like, in what order we're going to play our songs and stuff. It's been pretty standard. We've had a lot of changes and chop arounds as we've introduced new songs to the set and tried different things. But what we find is that, what we have found is that there is always an unpredictable element to the gig.
Yeah.
Whether that's gear going wrong, because it's electrical, it will always go wrong at some point.
Yeah.
And it will always go wrong when you most
the worst moment.
It will always just go that lead's gone or something, you know. I mean, like, luckily, like, for instance, we played our first gig in the US this year, where we went to South by Southwest last March. It was incredible. Texas is an incredible place. So much Mexican food, it's amazing. But we played our first gig in a place called the British Embassy, Music Embassy. Mm. We hadn't done our research properly in terms of both of our guitarists have a POG 2 octave pedal, and that's quite sort of a definite sound that we use. And it's got a slightly different power usage than a lot of the other pedals. And the US mainline, main power supplies, have a different power outage than the British ones.
Right.
So all of our plugs, though they were converted, didn't work for the POG 2 because it needed more paddle, sort of thing. More paddle? That's not what I meant. It needed more power.
Yeah.
Sorry. And so suddenly there's like a core part of our sound that we just can't use, and because you needed like converters and all this sort of stuff. And like, we're like, it's our first gig in the US and we haven't got our sound. Oh no. Luckily, like, one of the team at the embassy sort of sorted us out in like it's really fun. Someone lent Mike a tuner pedal because his wouldn't work on the power either, and we accidentally took it back to the UK with us. Oh. And so Mike felt so bad because he was like, if someone nicked my pedal, I'd be fuming. So he posted it back to them and said, and they were just like, I completely forgot that I'd given you that. Yeah.
That's a commendable honesty, though. I'm impressed with that.
I mean, the thing about, I think everyone assumes that there's this sort of competition amongst bands because it's a cutthroat industry and all that. I've found nothing but camaraderie in the band scene at the moment, especially in the circuits we've been playing. Like, we've got to know a lot of incredible bands, and they've got to know us, and like, we're all in the same boat. Yeah. Like, yes, it's nice when one of us goes or like gets bigger and stuff. It's great, you know. And
that's slightly disappointing, actually.
Yeah,
I was wanting sort of massive punch-ups.
I mean, there is that as well.
That scene is an absolute twat. You know,
all the juicy gossip.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got some of them too.
You all get on.
Well, not all of us.
No. Right. We'll come back to that later. Yeah. Which is a shame. But I think we need to rewind slightly.
Some
listeners might not be aware of the band. Tell us a little bit about the Himalayas and your style.
Yeah, so we're a sort of, how do I put it, garage indie rock, heavy, it's sort of rock and roll, I don't know.
Like, very high energy, isn't it?
It's very sort of, raucous. Like,
lots of teenage angst.
It's sort of similar to, like, I'd say Royal Blood, Queens of the Stone Age, Arctic Monkeys. Those are sort of our main influences, I would say.
I've been listening lately, I thought there is definitely a bit of early.
They're sort of, they're like big part of the band in terms of, we all love them, and you know, big influence for us.
Yeah.
Lots of, like I said, lots of Queens of Stone Age.
Yeah.
Like, we all, it's quite funny because we've all got this like core group of bands that we all adore,
yeah.
And then, but then each individually has their own style as well.
Yeah.
Like I'm a blues man, like I'm Muddy Waters, B.B.
Yeah,
King,
right.
Johnny Hooker, like all that sort
yeah.
of stuff. James likes Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, you know, Rolling Stones and stuff. Mike likes anything, like literally,
yeah.
if it's good music, he'll like it.
Yeah.
And if it's bizarre music, even better.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny
you mentioned Zeppelin there, because I thought there was a bit of sort of the like Led Zeppelin 1.
Oh, yeah.
So we're really, to me, I thought, God, that sounds a bit like Zeppelin 1.
Oh, thank you.
Well, yeah, I've got to say that. It's definitely a compliment. Yeah,
no, brilliant, yeah.
And how did you come to get involved yourself?
So I used to work with James, the drummer. We used to work in Patisserie Valerie together, and that's how we got to know each other.
Yeah.
Just eating a lot of cake in the
yeah.
in the
sounds
bag.
Right
like,
to me, yeah.
So what bands do you like? So Joe and Mike, the two frontmen, they've been in bands since they were weenie sort
yeah.
of thing, and. They went to the same school as James, but James was a year above them, and James was in a separate hardcore pop punk band.
Mm-hmm.
When he was, they did really well actually. They like played festivals and crowd. They were called Local Foreigners,
right?
And yeah, they like played festivals in Prague
yeah.
and support the Coral and stuff like that. They did really well, but. They split up, and James was looking for a band. Joe and Mike were looking
yeah.
for a drummer. It was just an easy setup.
Came
together. They played as another band called The Drains for a little bit. Very 70s punk
yeah.
name, innit?
Yeah, it is.
And then I knew James. We were working together, and James literally sort of came into work one day and was like, "Do you fancy being in a band?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. What do I play?" He's like, "Play the bass." I was like, "I don't know how to
Everyone
play bass,
wants
mate."
To be asked that question, don't they?
Yeah.
So you couldn't even play the bass.
I play guitar. I've played guitar for like 10.
This is very late 70s. Doesn't matter. We can't play.
Yeah, literally. Sid Vicious.
Yeah.
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 No, but no. As in, like, so I played guitar
yeah.
and. I'd never even picked up a bass.
Yeah.
It was like, it's the same top four strings, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I went to practice, and Mike, the guitarist, he's got this sort of viola bass that I had a quick go on,
yeah.
and we had a practice, and I was like, this is really fun. I'm really enjoying
yeah.
this. So that day, I bought a bass and an amp and was like, right, this is cool. And then we were... Like, yeah, we just ended up playing Cardiff like absolutely loads for the first year.
Yeah.
And sort of gigging to the point where we almost knew what was going to happen beforehand.
Right.
And that sort of allowed us to improve our live sounds
yeah.
and like tailor the set.
Well,
we started off in places like Goody Who.
Yeah.
I think our first ever gig was in Gassy Jack's in town, actually.
Yeah.
That was like a month after I joined the band,
yeah.
and I remember playing an Amy Winehouse cover, and that was about it. And that's all I can remember of it.
Yeah.
I was very nervous. I just remember that, like, cause I was like, "This is
yeah,
the first
yeah,
bit of stage work I've done in a long time." And played their Undertone, played the Moon Club,
yeah.
Played Welsh Club. Couple of times and yeah and like sort of
now,
all around
Cardiff for venues.
It's
the last
getting
few
there.
Years
yeah,
anyway, it's a lot better. Yeah.
There's been some real work on the venues
yeah.
in Cardiff. Like unfortunately, they've also got rid of a couple of really good venues. But I mean, it's a developing scene.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of good bands coming out
yeah.
of Cardiff. Well, there's a lot of good bands coming out of South Wales,
yeah.
to be honest, and North
yeah.
Wales. And but it's it's one of those things where. I'd like there to be like a mid-range venue.
Yeah.
Like we've got really good sort of 50 cap venues and 50 to 100 cap venues.
Yeah.
We've got really good 200 to 250 cap venues. And then we've got sort of the 1,000 cap venues. We've got like Tram Shed
yeah.
and stuff and they're,
yeah,
and they're great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a good venue.
Excellent.
I'd like to have like a couple more like Tram Shed, you know, like that's just a personal
preference.
Even
sort of between 500 to 700 people, it's not that, there's a gap, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's been a real sort of, I mean, Cardiff's a brilliant place to especially to get up and running.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of support in Cardiff for music, and it's great. That's
really good to hear. And how did you come up with a name? Because there's a band called Tibet. I mean, what is this obsession? You can't go on tour with Tibet. That'd be ridiculous.
Nah, that would be funny. But our answer is mountains.
It's a good answer.
No, we were in the car and like James went, all right, how about this, Himalayas? And we went, he was like, just let it simmer, let it simmer. 2 days later, he was like, how are you feeling about Himalayas? And we were all like, that's really good, man. And we sort of did that thing of calling ourselves something without actually researching anything about it. Named that has actually been quite interesting. Like, we've met quite a few people from the Himalayas now who've gone, oh, that's a good band name. And I'm like, oh, cheers. Yeah. You know, and they've gone, I'm from the Himalayas. I was like, what? And like, we've also, my flatmate Ash, he's from Delhi, he's saying that Himalayas is actually the name of one is of Everest, and it's not the mountain range. Himalaya is one mountain, he was saying. Whether that's true or not, it's always referred to as
the Himalayas.
Yeah, but apparently it's like one mountain. Yeah. Though I'd say that comes from my flatmate and not necessarily
verified.
Necessarily a credible source. So, we came up with a name and. It's much better than the drains, so I feel.
Much better than the drains, I would give you that. Actually, it does work, though, weirdly, it does, doesn't it? I mean, it's a funny thing, you do need to bed it in.
Yeah.
But then actually.
I think when a name, sort of like a band name, it's an odd thing where at first you have to get used to your own band name first.
Yeah.
Like, because then you can say it with confidence.
Yeah.
But there's some
and then
brilliant.
You do a show and people come to the show. And they go,
And then they link that name to you.
Then
that's
thinking
great.
Of the name, are they? Yeah, they think, no.
And I've always liked long band names.
Yeah.
The first band I ever went to go see, I was like 14. It was in Portsmouth. It was it's a band called 80s Matchbox Beeline Disaster. It's a great
That's
name.
Snappy. Great
yeah,
name.
It's a great name.
Rolls off the tongue.
But there's a lot of bands with like slightly longer names now. Yeah. Like, especially coming out of Australia, like you've got the King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard. Yeah. You've got Psychedelic Porn Crumpets. You've got they're great, you know.
Yeah.
And Sonic Death Monkey. And that's great. But it's one of those like. Yeah, I don't know. A name's a very odd one. To sort of get on board,
that's
sort of
a fun
thing,
things,
yeah.
As well, isn't it?
Yeah,
sorting that out. And the reaction's been tremendous, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Especially over the last year or so. Why do you think that is? Because obviously, loads of bands can do 10 years in a bloody van and then make some progress. But it seems to have been quick. In my imagination, it seems quick.
It's been we've been a combination of a lot of hard work and a lot of luck. And a lot of having the right sort of introductions, I'd say. Like, for instance, so basically it started happening when we released our first single, Thank God I'm Not You, which was the sort of song that gave us the first step.
Yeah.
Like, it gave us a proper leg up.
It's good to know I influenced
the
song.
Yeah. But basically, we were very lucky in that song got picked up by Virgin Radio and got playlisted on them for 8 weeks. It got put on quite a lot of Spotify playlists, which is now still on. Track of the Week on Radio 1. We've had a lot of exposure. We've had a lot of exposure from that track.
Yeah.
And we found, that was the one that sort of, that, it was a very odd thing to experience because it picked up so much traction for us from that song, in terms of not just like people haven't heard of us, but also in terms of like our gig started being a lot further afield, you know, because suddenly we could go to Manchester and have a couple of people come along, you know, and it sort of fueled that. And then we also had a lot of good people help us along, and a lot of you know, good bands help us along, and like it helps having, we've had a really good producer who's helped our sound out massively, and that, so the song sort of boosted us into the next step, I would say, in terms of, before that song we were wanting to do it as a career, but we weren't sure how it would go, and you know, you still got that one foot out the door where you're sort of going, well, I'm going to do this while it's fun and while it's great, and but you know, but you know, you can never know, and then that's like, that song really sort of got us to a position where we could go, we sort of were thinking to ourselves, like, we could do this, like, you know, this is something we could do, and
that's ridiculous.
It's a very it's a very
scary, maybe, as well.
Scary, I'd say definitely scary, incredibly exciting, and like, but it's that sort of, right, I need to think of whether like this is possible, and then you start thinking about it, you're like, nah, it's possible, it's whether I'm willing to put all that work in, and we all were, and you know, we were all like, no, actually, this is the only thing we all want, so let's do it. You know, I think we've been very solid as a four as well. Like, we individually got on very well, and also there's enough banter in the band to sort of keep everyone level headed, I guess. And like, I think we're quite blessed in the. I don't feel that any of the boys have, like, there's no massive egos clashing. We all sort of get on, and we
again,
all sort of.
That's disappointing.
I know, we're such a non-drama band. So like, what's even worse is that.
Come on.
I know, like, you know, what's even worse is that, like, none of us really drink, to be honest. Like, no, to the point where I'm a lightweight, so I'll have 2 pints and be out. So I can't drink before a gig. And after a gig, usually we've got a 4-hour drive home, so I don't really want to drink on that either. James is the only one with a license, so he's the one doing all the driving.
So he doesn't drink either.
So he doesn't drink. Joe, the minute Joe has a drink, he thinks his voice goes bad, so he doesn't touch these. Michael have one or two, but again, can't play drunk, so...
Yeah.
Although he will counter that and say he plays better drunk, but but it's not true. But you know, you get, like, Mike and I are gonna have like one or two before a show, and that'll be it. Like, and by the time we've done the show, because a lot of people don't realise, being in a band, it's all, you know, there's a lot of waiting around for 30 minutes of a lot of fun. You know, you know, there's sound checks at 3. You'll have the gig at 9, so you've got 6 hours of just hanging about.
Yeah.
And it's very, very easy just to. In that 6 hours, have a pint every hour, and then get to the gig and be like, "So, what's my name?"
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a very easy thing to do, and it does pass the time a lot better. Yeah. But you won't have a better show for it. And we've sort of always felt that the show is more important than our fun.
Yeah. It's actually a professional decision.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's at the end of the day, I enjoy a pint, but. I don't enjoy making a fool of myself on stage because I'm blackout drunk trying to play a bass in time. And that's all, you know, well and good. But yeah, the only time I have ever played drunk, like proper drunk, was we had a gig in Blackpool, and it was my birthday. And so I had like
to be drunk in Blackpool.
Six. Yeah.
Kind of helps.
Yeah, it does.
No offense.
But no, it's a cracker night, actually, because it was my birthday. I'd had like 6-7 pints and was on stage. By the way, like 2 pints for me and I'm pretty gone.
Right.
6 and 7, I'm like, absolutely. No, I'm like apoplectic. If I have 7 pints, I'm no good to anyone. However, 2 minutes before going on stage, I sort of had that sort of sweat moment where you're like, I'm so drunk, I'm not going to be able to do this. And the minute you step on stage, that fear sort of kicks in, where you go, if you mess up, everyone's going to know you're drunk.
Yeah.
And I think I was saved by the paranoia and probably played the best gig I've ever played. But yeah, I'm not repeating it. It was too much pressure to act sober in the moment.
So, no one needs that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that because obviously from a distance, being a band, it sounds very glamorous, etc. Was that the biggest shock to you, that the amount of hanging around there is? And
I quite like hanging around. Yeah. So it was. It's not necessarily a shock because you do your sort of music apprenticeship almost, where the first year, like I said, we were playing every gig we could say yes to, and usually that meant that we were opening. And if you're opening, you arrive at five, usually have a sound check, but if not, you just get a line check and it's, you know, 6 o'clock. Then you've got an act
with the two blokes in the audience.
Exactly. That's how it is, and you learn their name. Yeah. And then you have a pint afterwards and watch the other bands. You know? Yeah. And there isn't much waiting around if you're the opener. Because you have sound check, you have an hour, doors open, on you go. Yeah. And then you can get smashed anyway because you're not playing a gig afterwards.
Yeah.
The waiting around came from actually going outside of Cardiff.
Yeah.
Like when we started getting gigs in London and Manchester and Liverpool and wherever, sort of thing, that's when the waiting it begins. Because number one, you've got to drive up there and you've got to be there by a certain time. And then once you're there, there's nowhere to go home.
Yeah.
So you can't go anywhere to get changed. You're either just sat in the band or sat in the green room or sat at the bar for 6-7 hours. Because if you're the headliner, the sound check's at 3-4 o'clock, and then you're not on until 10-11 o'clock at night. And then you've got to drive home afterwards as well. And it can be exhausting, especially if you've got to do that every night for a week or two for a tour or something, or a month or two even, you know. Like we've met a couple of bands who, like, we'll be supporting them and they'll be on their 61st date straight, right? You know, and it's just like that is hard work.
What do they say about that then? Do they say that's a real grind, or is it
that's like, that is hard work, especially for instance for a singer. If you're belting your voice out 61 days in a row, your voice is gone.
Yeah.
Like, there is no chance. Unless you're, you know, training it at all points and keeping it, you know, keeping real good care of it. But even then, on the road, there's a lot more chance of picking up any illness or something like that, because you're staying in so many weird, cheap hostels, or you're meeting so many people at gigs who might be ill or whatever.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you're then stuck in a van with 6 other people for 6-7 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you're probably not sleeping until 1 in the morning every night, and you're probably getting up at 8 in the morning every day so that you can go drive somewhere.
So when you've done a set of shows, then is it how good does it feel to get back to here, you know, to the deli? Do you enjoy then that sort of contrast? Then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I like having it as a sort of split life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it sounds very, it sounds pretentious, I guess, but I don't know, like, I like having that sort of ability. I'll go off to Manchester and play a gig and have, like, one of the craziest gigs ever or something, and then the next morning I'm back in the coffee shop having a nice coffee in the morning and some poached eggs, and I'm like, oh, thank the Lord for poached eggs, you know. And I, like, you know, I think there's like, for instance, for now, we haven't had a gig in a little while because it's been Christmas and New Year, and we've also been recording quite a lot, and we've been trying to we've had a lot of back office scenes we've been trying to sort out, and, you know, and that's great, you know, organising ourselves for the year, sort of thing. And we've all got the itch now. We're like, let's get back on the road.
Well, we need to. Yeah. My very next question. It's still early in the year, isn't it? Mid-February or whatever. What does the show look like in terms of the band?
Busy. Like, we've got, hopefully, going to be bringing out some new music soon.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Are we looking at an LP?
Hopefully we're going to be doing a couple of singles.
We've got a few EPs.
One EP and three singles.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be looking at a couple more singles, and then there may be an album in the works, but we need to figure that out logistically. We also have, like, it's festival season. We basically said we want to play every single one of them ever, sort of thing, and see how that turns out. But yeah, no, it's looking busy.
Bookings in the bag,
Some of them, like, so we've just announced that we're playing Neverworld Festival, which would be cool. I think Mad Cool Festival has been announced as well. Which, like, that's going to be mental. I think that's in Madrid, which is wicked.
That's a great place.
That'd be wicked. Although I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I should have checked that first.
Yeah,
it'd be fine. If we're not playing that, I apologise.
we'll have a chat about that after.
But yeah. But yeah, no, there's a couple that have been confirmed, a couple of them are still pending. Couple of things in the pipelines that we're looking at, it's looking like it should be a lot of fun.
Because were the shows selling well towards the end of last year?
I mean, like, we played some of the biggest shows we've ever played last year. Some of them our own, some of them supporting other people, and like we like a big one for us last year. We supported the Kaiser Chiefs a couple of times. One of them was at Somerset in Taunton, and that was 13,000 people, which was mental. Very odd, it's a very surreal thing to look out upon. I'm used to seeing the sweat on people's faces, like up right close, sort of thing, you know. And I like that sort of close intimacy in a gig, because it's sweaty and raucous, and you can sort of swing about a lot more and not look as much of a prat. but it's very much a sort of sea of faces, and you sort of go, oh.
Is it a bit of a blur?
Becomes one,
yeah,
because. Again, I wear sunglasses on stage, so I don't have to look at anyone. And what a lot of people don't realise is that I tend to close my eyes. Because, I don't know, actually you just do. You're sort of rooted and you're just there. No, I can't play with my eyes closed. I do look at them. but sometimes when it's
annoying,
I'm so good at that. No, I'm definitely not. No, if I close my eyes, you wouldn't know about it, because there wouldn't be a bass in the track. But I close my eyes quite often, and then you open up and go, oh, there's a lot of people. And yeah, it's a bit surreal.
Though, if those 13,000 people are going
nuts. Oh yeah, no, it's a very hard thing to explain. It's like, you know, when you get when you hear a good song, or you hear someone with a good voice, and you get the little prickles up the back of your neck, and like your hackles raise slightly. Yeah. Hackles—that's the wrong word. Shackles? I can't remember the word. But when you sort of like you get the shivers, and. It's not necessarily because your own song, it's because someone else is yelling. And that for me is like a very moment.
A visceral reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very well. You come off stage and be like, you're just like, oh, that was good. Yeah, that was fun. And then, very odd. Yeah, but nonetheless, it's an awesome experience.
It sounds absolutely tremendous, and it sounds like a great year coming up.
Hopefully,
So change of pace then. Back to the deli.
Absolutely, yeah.
God, it's a real crunchy. So, obviously, you haven't been at the owner here for that long.
No.
What was your vision like for this place then?
Hard one.
You've already sort of put your own stamp on it.
So successfully. Thank you. From what we found is that, when I was working, the atmosphere that the previous owner cultivated almost was. It was somebody's front room. You could walk in and feel completely at home.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of amazing.
Yeah.
That's a very hard thing to do.
Time,
yeah. Oh yeah. No. I mean,
10 years.
Even getting a job here, I would have come back.
Yeah.
You know, like, had they not accepted my my CV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And had they not, you know, I like, it's just that instantly there was this atmosphere that I could feel that I was like, God, I just feel relaxed.
Yeah.
I haven't even done anything. How is that possible?
Yeah.
And so the keeping that feel for me was very important.
Yeah.
Because the previous owner like managed to make everyone feel looked after.
Yeah.
And also I like really nice food. I do everything I do for the food and the fun.
Yeah.
Because food is important, and I think that. The easiest way to understand any culture or any type of person is sit down and have a meal with a family from that place, and you'll understand a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like I no, just think no, no, it's food. Right. Food yeah. Food and music are the best connectors that you can get for people. I feel.
Yeah.
And I think that the quality of the products that. The previous owner had as well, I wanted to keep on, so we've kept a lot of the same things, just sort of we've stripped it back a little bit, streamlined it a little bit, made it easier for ourselves to actually operate, and got rid of a 4 meter counter fridge, and James, business partner, built this lovely sort of wooden bar.
Yeah, it's really smart.
And it sort of all came together in a. It's now a cafe. It's not a deli. We're looking for a new name. Okay, so if anyone has any suggestions, there's already Himalaya Cafe. If anyone does have any suggestions, then
that'd be great. there's your opportunity. You can name the deli. Give it a new name.
Yeah.
So far,
we've got the Bruise Brothers. Or Unplugged.
Keep plugging away.
Simply Rouge, but that's I don't like Simply Red. When I have long hair,
you don't strike me as a Simply Red kind
of thing. I mean the thing is that when I used to have much longer hair when I was 15, and so everyone in my class used to call me Mick Hucknall, and I was like, Jesus. So I don't actually like Simply Red purely on principle.
I'm not sure insults get much worse than that. So you've kind of answered this already. Mm. We've got to touch upon to crunch gears again. So when you knock off from the deli, not the deli, the cafe, and you go out, what does a night out in Cardiff look like? Sounds like you're going to tell me, I have half a shandy and then go home.
Oh Christ, yeah. I've always been sort of 13 going on 80.
Yeah.
From a place of lots of old man pubs where you know the curfews
are to be said for old man
pubs. There's nothing better to be honest, like number one we had nice beers as well. There's great beers in Cardiff but
I think
originally I'm a bit from all over. So I was raised in France for the first 8 years of my life.
Very cool to say that.
I know, isn't it? And then, my dad still lives out there and go visit him and stuff, and I went to school there, so I've still got a couple of mates over there.
Is your dad actually French?
No, so neither of my parents are actually French. But my dad's been living there for 35 years, so he's been living more in France than he has been in the UK.
Yeah.
And my mum's from the Isle of Wight, so. And then when I was 8, we moved to Salisbury in the south of England. Mm-hmm. Lovely place to grow up, but like boring as anything.
Yeah.
Until the other shop. Lately. Yeah, yeah. Lots of Russian spies now, which is
considerably less boring.
Sort of considering going back now. I'm enjoying the fun. No, but so I was raised in Salisbury. Like I said, it's like a couple of shops, a cinema, and 37 pubs, and it's like they're all great pubs.
Great old man pubs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Went to college there, and we used to go and see him a lot. And
there's some great pubs.
Do you know the
Tollgate? Yeah, I know the Tollgate. Yeah.
Great old ales and old men. Basically. Yeah, that's pretty much how it was.
Mum was the Hanson Tavern,
right?
And just great beer, and they had a great poker night as well.
Yeah.
I was rubbish though. I'd put 10 quid on the table, it'd be gone, and I'd be like, well, that's my money for the evening, I'll see you guys tomorrow.
So basically, you've just been drifting north then.
Yeah, pretty much, And but yeah, so then I came to Cardiff 2014? Right. Yeah, must have been 14. Five, six years ago. And to do theatre and drama. And that was a lot of fun. But I quit halfway through the second year because I was like, no one actually needs a drama degree. Unless you're doing a drama degree, in which case, go for it. But
yeah.
I didn't feel I needed one. I felt like I'd got what I needed out of it. And I was working a lot at the time. I was working like 60 hours a week in a dessert parlour on top of 25 hours a week of uni.
Yeah.
I sort of burnt myself at both ends and didn't really want to do it anymore. And so I quit uni, quit the job, got a much nicer job and joined the band.
It's worked out pretty well, hasn't it?
Well, I stayed in Cardiff because Cardiff's like, it's become my favourite place. Like the reason I came to Cardiff, like I did all the acting colleges, like you go to Central School, Speech and Drama, Lip, Roseproof, all of them, and I kind of had a bit, like I said, I've never been great with authority, and I kind of got there and I kind of felt like they made me feel privileged to get in, and I wasn't even in yet, like you know, and drama school is one of those odd ones where it's the only school that will make you pay for the audition as well, and like I just I was just like, I, you know, I have to learn contemporary Shakespeare, like no, contemporary plays, monologues from contemporary plays. You have to learn two Shakespearean monologues, then you have to have a devised piece and also a piece of musical theatre. Now I can't sing. That's why the band have never given me a microphone.
Hence being the bass player.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of the way, yeah,
and. And so, like, you have to do all this preparation. You have to all of these things. I just kind of felt like, I mean, fair enough, you have to audition, but at the same time, like, number one, why am I paying for it yet? Because I'm not in, you know. Number two, like, you've made me feel privileged to be there, and I'm not in yet, you know. And then I came to Cardiff and went to USW, and the guy went, it's not really an interview, it's more of a chit-chat. And I was like,
I'm here.
I'm staying. You've sold me on that one line. And yeah, absolutely. And you know, we had the interview, and you know, so I started in theatre and pantomime. So I was my first pantomime dame was at 15, which was great being in an all boys school as well. You know, like I definitely didn't get ripped into either. That. But hey, I got to wear a strawberry dress when I was 15, so it's fine. I enjoyed the pantomime dame. And so we had to chat about that, and I just sort of felt great. And then like I basically felt really nervous from that. After the interview and stuff, so I was like, it was the last of the whole lot of them, and I was like, well, that's where I want to go because it seems amazing. So I went and bought loads and loads of sushi and made myself very ill because I ate too much. And was like, and then basically got helped out by a Welshman, like the most Welsh person I've ever met. Like, he came and was like, oh, was he going? I'm going to slay the Welsh accent now, but he sort of like, how's it going? Oh, get it all out.
It's like, oh, that was a bit deli.
It's a very similar accent, your friend. But just automatic, like, what I find with Cardiff, the reason why I love Cardiff over a lot of other places that I've been to, is because, for instance, my older sister lives in London. Mm. If you ask someone for directions in London, you think you're mugging them.
Yeah.
Ask for directions in Cardiff, and you'll get a 40-minute conversation about every place you didn't really want to go, but you're probably going to end up going to now.
In fact, they'll have a committee forming around you.
Or you should go this way. And it's just brilliant, you know. There's such a, like I say, I'm a country boy, well, country-ish, and so I've always sort of been able to walk through a village or city and know at least five or six people that I walk past. And, morning, you know, and I've always liked that.
Yeah.
And like, you get that with Cardiff. I've been here for 5 years, 5-6 years, and it's like, you know, I can walk through Cardiff Centre and I know where a couple of my mates were, yeah. so I can go meet them on the way. You know, usually I'll bump into someone on their way home or something like that. And it's that sort of intersection of, like, you know, there's a lot of fun things there, and like, just people are just friendly, man. Yeah, like, people actually enjoy.
No, as someone who's come being. From, you know, and you've obviously lived in a number of places, that's really, really, really good to hear. Yeah,
oh, it's a wicked place. I love it.
You're not planning on going anywhere anytime soon?
No, Japan.
Is that north? Just keep moving.
Yeah, just keep going north.
You're going to end up in Oslo, in the Arctic Circle at some point.
I can't, well, you know, at least I'd avoid the sun.
Yes, indeed you would.
For radio listeners, I'm ginger, so... The sun and me are not good friends.
Oh, you'll end up in Scotland. That's the perfect place for you.
Although apparently Cardiff's got higher rainfall than most places in the UK. Right. Yeah, yeah. So that's why I picked Cardiff.
Seamlessly.
Literally.
Oh, Louis, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. It's been a pleasure. Yeah,
absolutely. No. Well, thank
tell you.
Tell
you what, the way things are going, I think you know it could be a huge year. Please come on again.
Oh, absolutely.
If this damn thing is still going. Please come on and we'll chat again.
Absolutely.
Let's make a date for January or February next year.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want just a bit of banter or chat.
Absolutely,
like
mate. Yeah. No, it's been absolutely happy. Superb. So thank you very much, Louis.
No, absolutely. You know, thank you very much for having me.
Big thanks to Louis. I really enjoyed chatting to him and I wish him all the luck in the world with the band and the cafe. Once again, please rate and review the podcast. It really does help. And join me again soon as Chief Executive of Trivalis Housing Association, Ian Thomas, stops by for a chat about pretty much everything and even throws in some choice poetry. So much to look forward to. But for now, thanks for listening.